These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a five-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at Rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at Rinse.com. That's Rinse.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Thank you. Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. This is your good friend, Patrick O'Dowd, welcoming you back into another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is here on the ChairShot Radio Network, a part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
And that's right, your favorite part-timer has decided to grace you all with his presence this week. However, we are still short a bandwagoner. Let's be clear. We're always short Ray Cash. Like, Ray Cash is as much a part-timer on this show as I am. He loves coming on the show. He might show up, he might not. I told him if he couldn't, don't. We'll see. But if he does, we won't miss him, but we might. Who knows? I don't care. The bigger news is that David Ungar is doing something. Who knows? He's probably golfing. That's right. He is whacking his balls and trying to put them in the hole. And we'll see how well that goes. I actually have no joke there. I was going to try to have a joke. It was going to be sexual. I failed. It's kind of the story of my life. I missed last week, noble listener, bowling for dollars. And I got no dollars. I spent dollars. Got no dollars. Did win a gift basket in a raffle. That was mildly exciting. I have shamed the bandwagon. I have done that. It's all
shame.
Me. And I
shame.
Yes, rightfully so. I'm
shame.
Sorry, Rebecca. I hope I can make it up
shame.
By joining
shame.
by joining a football team and be coached by Ted Lasso.
Shame.
She can, maybe he can straighten me up and that'll get me back. I can do that. I don't know. But I am not alone. I am, of course, joined by the guy who never misses an episode of Bandwagon Nerds, the executive vice president of talent relations here at the Chair Shot Radio Network and chief executive officer of Wednesday evening programming, Mr. PC Tunney, Mr. Saturday Night. Welcome back.
The streak is a source of pride and also a curse of pride in not wanting it to end at any point.
At some point there's going to be
something that comes up that I'm not going to be able to do the show. But until then, I'm good.
You know what? It is good. And it's funny. So I was trying to look when I'm going to be absent again next. And in a month?
Here's the
Less
thing.
Than a month, maybe?
Ray is full-time when it comes to having a game, a list, or trivia on the show. Then he's there. But otherwise, it's...
Oh, yeah. If I say I'm thinking about a game, Ray, like, but he'll, like, what?
Here's the thing, Patrick. The funny thing, we talk about my streak. I think there's someone here today that this is going to start a streak for him.
This is the beginning of a streak because we did bring back, I hear he has a podcast that people listen to, that's okay. But we brought back DJ from the Mindless Wrestling Pod. I've heard things. I'm sure it's a wonderful podcast. Welcome back to the program, DJ. This is a big deal. Two in a row.
Hey, yeah, thank you for having me back. 2 weeks in a row, I got invited back. It'll probably be two and done. I say that, but...
You know...
Fast forward to October, DJ making his 17th straight appearance.
Who knows? Again, you never know when I'm going to not show up to a podcast. Like, you just don't. It's always...
Listen, Patrick,
I am a roulette wheel
Dave
of excitement.
Dave and I dispelled DJ's excuse of feeling like he doesn't have anything to add to certain topics that he hasn't followed too closely, because last week he was trepidatious about a few things and completely knocked it out of the park as far as being here and being an expert and like a complete 100% part of the show now. DJ, completely christened, baptized nerd.
Let me see if I can repeat that this week, because I'm looking at the rundown and... There's already one segment I'm going to be out on because I haven't watched any, and I'm ambivalent about the trailers, but let's rock.
Well, okay, so most of the time when I pick the trailers, the people are ambivalent about the trailers.
Yeah, don't feel like you're anybody else other than the bandwagon.
Because let's be real here. Would Patrick, half the time when I do the trailer park, it'll be like, oh, this looks odd.
Listen,
let's put this one in.
The two trailers you have this week that aren't Marvel, I think they have huge stars in them. So, like, I'm glad you put them in there.
Right. They're legit. I did want to say, you know, we talk about, you know, people out nerding one another. I have to show you. So my birthday was like a month and a half ago. But my one of my best friends, my buddy Ryan, he got me this gift. And he had not had a chance to give it to me until this past Friday. He's a DJ, and I showed up at his gig, and so he gave me this gift. And I have to show you probably the nerdiest gift I've ever received. So he does a lot of thrift shopping, right? Goes and gets gifts of various things, and he got this for me. It's like stuck in there really good. Fine, I guess there we go. For $20.
Look at that fucking beauty.
This giant Slave One model, complete with dude inside. This thing is ridiculous. And my wife's first thing. So here's what I did. So I got this at late at night on a Friday because I'm over at a buddy. I'm over at this gig. So I bring it home. And it's, 1 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, well, where the fuck am I going to put this? So what did I do? I put it on my wife's coffee stand next to her little reading nook in the living room. So she saw it first. And it was like, so where are you going to put that? And I was like, well, I got it a spot. She's like, so yeah, where are you going to put it? I was like, it's on the ledge.
I can see.
Oh, it's right there.
Patrick, you know what I'm thinking about right now? I'm thinking about
what's that?
Michael Scott having to hang his 12-inch LED TV on the wall and watch it because Jan wouldn't let him do anything and made him take down his St. Pauli girl sign and his Dundies.
Well, this beauty may make its way over to the University of Massachusetts and be in my office at work, which I'm perfectly fine with. It'll go great with my Disney pin collection and all of that. But yes, so I got this giant Slave One. I think it's a toy, but I'm calling it a model because I'm never going to use it as a toy. But it's awesome. Great, great little birthday. We do have quite a little show for you all today. We are going to talk about the first three episodes of Ironheart that debuted this week on Disney Plus. We have three trailers at the trailer park. One is the final Fantastic Four trailer, and then a couple of movies that just kind of tickled my fancy. And then a lot of news around the Nerdosphere before we talk about a list, an interesting list. The New York Times put it out talking about the top 100 films of the 21st century. I'm only going to look at the top 30 because I don't have a subscription to the New York Times and didn't want to make an account and didn't want to find the list on my own because I got lazy. Probably could have gone to Reddit. It would have been fine. But what I did do is work off a tweet that Tony shared. So a lot of show to talk about, a lot of good stuff, but let's start. Tony, do we even have the music we're not supposed to have? No, it's not Trailer Park First now.
Oh, I can play like some Marvel music, but I don't. Yeah.
Maybe.
Will
Spotify, will Spotify get mad at us?
I could give a shit. Their threats were all fake anyway, by the way.
Okay.
I like the piano version. Can I play the piano version?
Sure.
Thanks, buddy.
So, yeah, after much, much waiting and patience, we finally got our first three episodes of Ironheart this week. And I'm just going to start the basic story here and where we are in this is Riri Williams, who we were first introduced in the MCU in Black Panther Wakanda Forever. She is taken under the wing of Shuri. She creates a prototype Ironheart costume. She's very much a part of Wakanda Forever. The story picks up after that quote-unquote internship where she is at MIT, where she's been for quite some time, but hasn't really made any progress towards finishing her degree and keeps getting into all sorts of trouble because she, well, will do anything for money to continue funding building her suit, including helping students with projects and homeworks by doing it for them. And has a mishap in a lab with her latest run, gets pulled into an office, and is expelled from MIT. She returns home to Chicago, stealing her suit before MIT can take away her access, where she is then shortly after trying to incorporate herself back into her family with her mother, boyfriend, best friend sort of thing going on. Not quite sure where that's going. Clear he has feelings for her anyway. But she falls in with a group of thieves led by the Hood. The Hood it's an interesting character to have be kind of the primary bad in this, just because he's kind of a fairly big magical figure in the Marvel Comics universe at different times. He's definitely street level. And so that makes a lot of sense. But Parker Robbins at various times, like Parker Robbins has been the Sorcerer Supreme at one point in the Marvel Comic Universe. So it's an interesting character. But so he falls in, or she falls in with this group, Parker Robbins, the Hood, who's leading this gang. In the meantime, she does, Riri does create an AI system that works within her suit and kind of everywhere, named Natalie. It is based on her brainwaves, and Natalie is very much a Riri's memories of her best friend, who we learn was killed in a drive-by shooting along with her father at the same time. And so...
Stepfather.
Natalie has like a very... What?
Stepfather.
Stepfather. But Riri clearly has, you know, created a persona with Natalie that's so strong that Natalie is very independent, very much like her best friend who's no longer with us. Throughout the course of these three episodes, she participates in a couple of heists, recognizes that there's something a little off with Parker Robbins in the Hood, which is the source of his power. It gives him the ability to turn invisible and to do some other things that folks aren't quite aware of fully yet. But by the third episode, she's already trying to look for a way out, wants to know what the cloak is made of. During a job, she rips off a piece of the cloak using some of her tech. Unfortunately, it is in a greenhouse system that is programmed to cut off and kill intruders with unauthorized tech. And in the midst of that, she, in her efforts to escape after being caught by Robbins' brother as the spy and kind of the person responsible for things going south within the job, he dies. She is having a panic attack. You learn that that's very much a part of her life ever since the shooting. And while she's having this panic attack, it's revealed to our good friend Parker that Riri is the root of the problems here. Now, the reason I say all of that, that's a very, very basic thumbnail-y description, is Parker Robbins is the bad guy. He is answering to someone else. And I'm here to finally say, I agree that it's Mephisto.
They already have.
Now.
They already have listed Sacha Baron Cohen in the series as Mephisto on multiple sites, credible ones as well.
Right. So here's the thing. Because I DM'd our friend the Void Master, where I said, for what it's worth, I too think we finally have Mephisto officially in the MCU with Ironheart / the Hood. He posted a GIF. He said, the joy in my heart of you finally admitting it. And was he the one who wanted credit? Wanted me to give them credit for admitting it? Here's the thing. Nobody on the bandwagon gets credit for this. And here's why. You can't keep shooting your shot on Mephisto for like 6 years worth of programming. And when he finally shows up.
Well, almost six now, yeah.
What?
Sorry, nothing.
I've WandaVision?
It's our sixth year.
WandaVision? Like, this shit started with WandaVision. And WandaVision was like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
People have been clamoring for a character. And here's the thing is, It's a fine character, 2021, so 4 years. People have been calling for Mephisto for 4 years now. And every time a new Marvel product shows up, so I'd be like, Mephisto, Mephisto, Mephisto. No. We finally threw the spaghetti at the wall and it stuck after saying it so many times. That's all.
All right.
So none of us are right.
Listen, you've gotten your point across about that. I think a more interesting way...
You're all wrong.
No, I think a more interesting way to do this, and I thought about this coming into the show when this was going to come up, is for me to ask you two questions, Patrick. One,
okay,
why did you not want Mephisto? And two, what do you think of what they're going to do with it now?
The reason I don't want Mephisto is because...
And I'm not asking these questions personally from like a bias one way or the other. I'm just interested because of... This is like a long... Like you said... This has been a bandwagon nerds thing for 5 years, right? I wish Ray was here right now.
It's been going on for... I know Ray wishes he was here as well.
I know he does.
And I wish Ray was here as well, and he could join DJ in talking about this. It's because I don't particularly like the character in the comics. Like, I don't care for him. He's never been a character that's really moved the needle. He's an extra planar character. He was involved in the Infinity Saga, actually, in the comics with Thanos. Like, he was there. He was present. I've never forgiven Marvel for Brand New Day, with the which is the Spider-Man, One More Day, which then turned into Brand New Day, which was the hard reset of the Peter Parker Spider-Man continuity, where Peter Parker makes a deal with Mephisto to save a dying Aunt May's life, resulting in everyone forgetting who he was, that he was Spider-Man.
So it and all then comes Mary back Jane, to Spider-Man.
But then Mary Jane makes it. It does, because that's my favorite comic book.
I know.
Just like you and the Flash, like it all circles back. And then the other key element is it's everybody except for Mary Jane. Mary Jane knows, she makes a deal with Mephisto as well, that she still knows, but Peter doesn't know that they were ever together. And so it's like this really dumb, like, Mephisto got their love. It was so pure and he ruined it and blah, ha, ha, ha. It's dumb. I hate it. It was dumb and it turned me off to the character. And Mephisto is the devil and isn't really a foe that you defeat. It's very Dormammu. Like, I come to bargain and maybe you outsmart Mephisto, but he'll be back. And I don't know. The character was first legitimately mentioned in Agatha All Along, with Death. Aubrey Plaza's Death character mentioned him as well. Mm-hmm. So it's fine. It makes sense. The Hood making a deal with Mephisto to help him with getting all this power and to rise and help bring down these evil corporations. Makes sense and is, you know, he is a big bad that people have been asking for and wondering about, so that he's finally coming. Good for them. I do think good for them.
I do want to give my thoughts on these first three episodes, but I think we can include DJ right here first and say,
yeah, go for it.
I know you haven't watched the series, right?
Right.
But what are your thoughts on Mephisto being included, introduced into the MCU? How do you feel about it? Because you're an MCU, DCU guy. You know, you may not have seen everything in the movie theater, but you know of all the stories and what's going on.
Yeah, I don't care. Mephisto has never been a character that I, like Patrick, it's never been a character that I've latched onto. I actually know, in my entire collection of hundreds of comics, I may have a handful that have him in them, and I probably haven't read them. So I don't really, unfortunately, have a lot to offer in the discussion.
But look, at least you kind of just did, though, because you are a comic book guy, you are a nerd and know a lot of shit, and it's just someone that doesn't pique your interest, like it does Ray's and maybe Dave's as well. To me, a lot of this is new, right? I'm the biggest bandwagoner of all of us when it comes to the MCU and the DCU. Go ahead, DJ.
I think if they present it fine, it'll be fine, as Patrick likes to say, fine. But until I watch it, I won't have an opinion on it either way.
I'll kind of go back to format, Patrick, and stop taking over your show there for a brief time to interview you and get DJ in here. And I'll go back to being an analyst and say in transition, DJ, this was a fun three episodes. It really is. It's a good time. Let me put on my critic hat first. The first episode, and I messaged Ray. I watched it last night. Right after I watched it, I messaged Ray. I want to give you guys exactly what I messaged him to. And it's readily available right here. Just watched episode one of Ironheart. The story introduction is rushed, but love everything else and where we are going. He said, awesome, man. Love that you like it. I was like, the first episode, now I had just got done recording some Afternoon Delight coverage of Night of Champions with DJ and AJ. Check that out on Chairshot Radio Network. And I had a few drinks, so maybe the pace was a little bit faster for a drunk Tunny was necessarily used to when he usually watches all of this sober on Sunday mornings. But I did enjoy the episode. I even enjoyed the next two this morning, two and three, and really loved it. I think the Hood is a really interesting character. I I know the actor that's playing him, and I've seen him in other stuff. His name isn't coming to the top of my head right now, but
Anthony Ramos.
Yes, Anthony Ramos. Who I was more impressed of, and I'm a big fan of, is Lyric Ross. I became a fan of hers when she was on This Is Us as Deja, Randall's adopted oldest daughter, on This Is Us. What a great show as well, if you're looking for a family drama. But she is wonderful as Natalie. I think that character is so cool. At times, it's annoying to me, the struggle between Riri and Natalie, considering like it's actually Riri's consciousness. But it's something to add depth to the storyline and not make it just so easy, because otherwise, Riri would just fly in, fly out, and conquer everything all the time and win. So I'm here for it. I'm having a great time. I thought it was really well done.
One of the other things that I really liked is we got an Iron Man 1 character callback.
Yep.
In Alden Einrich's character, who starts out as Joe McGillicuddy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you learn that his real name is Ezekiel Stane, the Zeke Stane, the son of Obadiah Stane. And that friendship that was built quickly is about to be tested at the end of episode 3, because Riri goes to him. He is basically smuggled out a ton of tech from his father's, and you learn that in the MCU, the world believes that Obadiah Stane died in a plane crash. They don't know that he was the Ironmonger who tried to kill Tony Stark and died in that incident. But what it did was left Ezekiel with a little bit of an inheritance and leftover tech that he then has in a black market bunker. And he gives some of that. He allows Riri to use some of that and develop it to help prepare her suit and make it hers. And some of that technology gets left behind in an active investigation scene where a bunch of people are dead.
In turn, Riri is helping him, you know, fill in some of the flaws and you know, upgrade some of his ideas as well, right? They're a really good team.
Right.
Revenge
on the white lady whose dog is pooping in his yard.
Yeah, I mean, fucking, those lazy-eyed Susans aren't going to cut themselves. You know, yeah, she gave him his inner intestinal fortitude to be able to stand up for himself, right? Like, he needed that. And
he was like, thank you for teaching. And then he used it against her, which is the best part, is he used it to get her to help him more.
Doing the deep dive in the comics on Ezekiel Zeke Stane, like, in the comics, this dude becomes one of the most powerful bad guys, like, of his time. Does he not? Like, he basically biotechs himself out, which he's already started to do with his forearm here. So I imagine that this relationship between Zeke and Riri is going to be this dangerous alliance of a friendship until he turns into a bad guy and maybe redeems himself.
All Diamond and Pat Tanaka?
In death.
Oh, wait, no, that's a different. That was Bad Company, my bad.
No, that's okay. I got it.
Yeah, he is going to be, yeah, I think he's the prelude of bad guys to come. And so we'll have to see where that goes. I overall enjoyed the first season, or the first three episodes of, as I said it to Ray, it's better than quote fine. It's good. I do think it's interesting that critical response has kind of been all over the place. Depending on which publication you listen to, people think it's either really, really great, it's terrible. I think that actually bodes well for the show, if that makes sense. When the opinions are kind of all over the place, review bombing before it even comes out, notwithstanding, it's getting a good audience score again. So it's been, I would describe it as a very solid show. Is it my favorite Marvel show that they put out? No. Is it the worst? By no means. It's pretty good. And I think when we get done with these last three episodes, I think this last episode of Ironheart is going to set up a lot for the future of other Marvel projects, whether that be with Mephisto, whether that be with Zeke Stane, and of course the Young Avengers. Like, will Riri be a part of the Young Avengers that are sort of floating around out there?
I mean, this screams Young Avengers, does it not? I mean, and for them to have like their big
for her,
to
yes,
possibly be Mephisto, where like younger people are really struggling with who they are, is probably pretty smart. I say this first half of what we'll call a first season, or just a series or whatever it is, mini series.
Right.
is set itself up where right now it's right in the middle of all these series, and it can move into the top half or move into the bottom half depending on how they finish this out. For now, I enjoyed the first three. I'm having fun, and I'm really looking forward to next week.
Yeah, I am too. I'm looking forward to finishing this out. I was surprised that the episodes were truly like full hours.
Longest episodes
we've seen in a while.
We're going to get... I think they wanted to make a movie, and they just decided to make two movies into a six-part series. Anyway, we get Sacha Baron Cohen in physical form before the end, in the next three episodes. Yes or no?
I think so. I think we'll see him.
All right, me too.
We'll get our first real look at Mephisto. I think it's finally happening. And so yeah, Patrick is caving. Patrick caves on Mephisto this time around. So, all right. Let's get DJ back into the show by heading over to the trailer park. What do you say? But before we do that, we got to get some trailer park music. And so DJ was the guest and got to pick last week. And so no picking this week for DJ.
Wow.
I'm going to pick because I'm a part-timer and I get to do it. Yeah, that's right. I'm in charge. I'm a big, strong man.
Patrick misses
a big, strong
banjo.
Man. I'm in charge.
I just heard I heard Patrick misses my banjos. That's all I heard.
That's right. Play number two for me.
Yes, sir.
That's right. Do it. It's the privilege of being in charge, DJ. You can demand banjo. All right. Welcome into this week's edition of the Trailer Park. Only three trailers today, and as is typical, when you get a somewhat strange trailer from Patrick O'Dowd, it's because while he was on YouTube pulling a link for a different trailer, he went, huh. And that, my friends, is how I came upon Begonia. And let me just say it straight up. So this movie stars Emma Stone, Jesse Pyman's, and Alicia Silverstone, believe it or not, in this film as well. It's a weird, surreal science fiction comedy where Emma Stone may or may not be an alien, but it's told you, like, this trailer is explaining things through a honeybee metaphor. It's confusing. It's weird. And I went, you know what? Yeah, I'm in. I'm in for confusing and weird as these two low-level workers decide to kidnap the CEO of this company because they believe she is an alien planning to destroy the Earth. And that's really it. That's what we see. These guys look thoroughly inept. We see them chasing Emma Stone through a backyard at one point. I didn't see Alicia Silverstone in the trailer anywhere. I may have missed it. I may have blinked. But I tend to trust movies that Emma Stone is in. DJ, do you trust movies that Emma Stone is in?
I like Emma Stone. I think this is probably going to be a fine movie. I don't think it's anything I'm going to see in the foreseeable future.
See, and you're worried about whether or not you fit in with this damn podcast. That's what they all say. Like, I'm going to say the exact thing. Tony's not even going to watch it. He's like, I'm out. No, I'm just kidding. No, that's if I do something clear. I almost put in another horror movie trailer just for Tony because I love having Tony bet you out of the trailer park because he hates horror movies. It takes a special kind of horror film to get him on there. But Tony, you tend to trust Emma Stone, right?
This trailer reminded me of another movie that I thoroughly enjoyed that had a whole bunch of A-list actors in it, too, that was really super fucking weird. And that movie was Magnolia. So I totally intend on watching this movie, actually, just not in the theater. These types of movies I love to watch at home, middle of the afternoon, just kind of, you know, start drinking when you start watching the movie, and by the end of the movie, you're buzzed and like, ah, what's going to happen? You know, it's fun because you think Emma Stone's character is definitely going to die. because we see the struggle start to happen, and we see her fall down, and all this other bullshit going on around it, and we don't really know the story. So, yeah, if you've never seen Magnolia, and this trailer is, you know, right up your alley, go back and watch Magnolia. It's fucking brilliant.
Now, this film is directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, who most recently was notable for the movie Poor Things. So for those of you who don't remember, that also had Emma Stone in it as well. It was nominated for an Oscar. It's quite good. The Favorite, The Lobster. If The Lobster is the movie I'm thinking of, it's the one where people turn into animals if they don't pair up with folks. And this person turns into a lobster. It's a whole thing. He is an interesting conceptual little director there. That pushes boundaries. Let's say that. And I'm ready for some boundaries to be pushed.
Did he do the chicken nugget movie with Awkwafina, where she turns in, or someone turns into a chicken nugget? Did you see that? Remember that one?
No, I don't think that was him.
Okay.
But DJ perked up at that. You can't see this because you have the screen.
Sounds like some straight to Tubi nonsense.
You know, you would think it can't be any worse than the horror movie that was just a possessed tire killing everybody called Rubber.
Well, think about what's out right now.
I didn't watch it, but I remember it.
Think about what's out right now with Amy Adams, Night Bitch.
Yep. Yeah, there's all kinds of just whack stuff out there, and I love it. But sometimes I just want a movie that makes sense to me to watch, even if it's a little silly, particularly if it's based on a true story. And we got a trailer, Channing Tatum and Peter Dinklage, called Roof Man, based on a true story. Oh, and what's her name? The love interest. Why am I forgetting her name? Kirsten Dunst. And let me tell you, I, one, haven't looked up the true story that this is based on. Basically, the story is Channing Tatum is a guy who escaped from prison, needs a place to lay low and hides out, and ends up sneaking into a Toys R Us and lives in the Toys R Us at night, but soon starts connecting and meeting up with the employees. Peter Dinklage plays like a manager. Kirsten Dunst plays an employee that they have a relationship with. It looks wacky. It looks silly. And yet gets serious. I'm in. I'm just going to say it. I'm in. Tony, what you got for me, buddy?
This film is a biopic of the fugitive Jeffrey Manchester, a former United States Army Reserve officer known colloquially as Roofman due to his propensity to steal from branches of McDonald's after entering their premises via the roof and evading capture from police by hiding in the walls of a Toys R Us store. So there you go. McDonald's and Toys R Us.
So yeah, I am going to, I don't know if I'll, this is my turn. I don't know that I'm going to see this in a theater. I'm going to watch this movie. I'm going to. Because the shit that they portrayed, regardless of how ridiculous or how close to the truth it is, it is played ridiculously. Therefore, I am in. I also love that Peter Dinklage, by the way, Oscar-nominated station agent actor Peter Dinklage is now the Toxic Avenger. He's now, playing goofy, playing Toys R Us manager while also doing things like Game of Thrones and just high-quality stuff.
Listen to Game Gone Wrong, part of the Attitude of Aggression.
Tony, PC Tony, always selling, baby. Always selling. DJ, you in?
If you guys give me five movies that I have no clue about or no desire to see and I have to watch them, this will be the fifth one in line. Nothing about this trailer said anything that I...
No, you're done talking. Like, why did we invite this man on the podcast if he's going to take a big turd sandwich on the trailer park and just throw it in front of everybody? Who do you think you are, sir? Who? Is he going to be okay?
DJ's like, I was promised some Zack Snyder talk on this podcast today.
There will be no...
I said my piece about Zack Snyder last week. I have nothing more on those assholes.
That would have been more fun.
The Snyder nerds are the Snyder nerds pissed me off.
Oh, they're nerds. So.
Well, that was just stupid. By the way, got my tickets for Superman. I will be going bright and early at 9:40 in the morning on Saturday.
Oh, you're gonna beat
July
me to
12th.
You son of a biscuit. 10:55 here in 3D on Saturday.
So yeah, myself and the little O'Dowd, who finally decided to go see it.
So me, DP, the Dylanator, DP's lady, and my mom wants to see this. So taking mom to the movies.
How about that?
Yeah.
All right, look at that. Okay, another movie that I know at least 2/3 of this bandwagon will be watching opening weekend, because we will be talking about it on that same podcast, is the Fantastic Four. They released the final trailer, which how many more trailers do you need? Because, hey, guys, I don't know if you know this. Fantastic Four is coming out July 25th. Did you know that?
Did not. Did not until this moment.
This is the same level of marketing that we got with Florence Pugh in Thunderbolts.
I was about to ask you if Florence Pugh was in it.
Hey, guys, did you know Florence Pugh was in the Thunderbolts? Because that's, like, this doesn't have that. Like, I will say, there's not as much showcasing of Pedro Pascal. Like, he's showcased, but I do feel like the airtime to the other three members of the Fantastic Four have been pretty good here. I do want to call out our buddy Dave. He's not here. DJ, I think you participated in this conversation. There's a little bit of a tease about it's clobbering time and being like, I hope this doesn't turn into the next Avengers Assemble. It's not. It's clobbering time is in no way, shape, or form on the level of Avengers Assemble. And I guarantee you, because this trailer made a big thing about Ben Grimm not saying it's clobbering time during the trailer, people begging him to say it. He's going to say it. At some point, he's going to say it in the trailer, in the movie. It will have a big moment in the movie. Everybody will love it, and it'll be fun. But poor Dave. Dave and DJ, you guys I wanted to hug you guys. I was really worried about you because you kind of got into this rabbit hole about, God, I hope this isn't something that they tease and tease and tease. I'm like, no, it's okay. Like, Dave was having a retainer boy moment in the chat where he was just like pre-mad about its clobbering time.
I may have been working. I may have been shooting. I'll never tell.
You worked yourself into a shoot. Is that what I'm hearing here?
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
And so, there's nothing really. We saw more of Galactus's feet.
He'll never tell anyone.
And he should. Rightfully so. But I just. I don't know if there's anything more to add to this, really, other than, hey, Fantastic Four dropping its final trailer, its final trailer, its final trailer. I just thought it was funny that we finally got around to teasing, which then also led to an interesting conversation about how much older than Sue Reed is, because there is some scuttlebutt out there of people freaking out about the age difference between the two characters. When that was always part of the dynamic. Reed was about 10 years older than Sue.
Yeah.
Like, it just always was.
I am so tired of so many trailers. Dave sent me something yesterday about people reacting that have seen Superman ahead of time. I'm like, I'm not reading it. I don't want to know anymore. I didn't watch this trailer. I'm so fucking tired of movies that give me the entire fucking movie before I even get there. Right? Maybe it's not all the good storyline turns, but it's probably like either it's the funny parts of the movie or the action parts of the movie. Like, I don't want any of that. Just give me enough to make sure I show up when it's something this big. So I didn't even watch this. I mean, how many fucking trailers have we already seen? You mentioned it already.
Right, but this time you got like three extra looks at Galactus's foot.
Fucking Galactus's
foot. And you needed that. He needed that.
I was not totally sold on his shoes until this trailer.
I know.
Now I'm totally sold on his shoes.
OnlyFans are complaining that there was no male involved in the pictures of his feet. I don't know.
Ah, dude, what's wrong with people? We all knew we needed more Thanos feet pics, and we also need to take a quick commercial break. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to get into some news around the Nerdosphere, some big director news, and a release date. So get excited. You've been listening, or you are listening, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Head over to prowrestlingtees.com/chairshot and invest in one of our mini chair shot shirt designs. It is the 4th of July week, people.
Mark.
And that means sale. That means sale on prowrestlingtees.com. This is a great opportunity to maybe get a couple of shirts. I don't know. There's a promo code over there somewhere. It's going to say something along the lines of America, Independence. Something, it's going to be there. So do it. You are doing yourself a disservice if you don't get one of our chair shot shirt designs and then get it soft style for a few dollars more. Your giblets are going to thank you. It's going to feel nice on your giblets. Soft and comfy, like a worm hug.
America, fuck yeah!
Tony will call you personally if you buy a shirt.
Sure.
And say, America, fuck yeah, just loudly into your phone or your computer.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Just like Trey and
DJ. What about you? Do you need something that feels good on your giblets?
Probably feel better about it if I unmuted my microphone and didn't have that awkward pause. But yeah.
And podcasting 101. There's always an awkward moment or two. All right.
Well, I was eating something, and so I muted my microphone.
We appreciate that.
You don't have to explain yourself to him, DJ.
Wow. I don't need your insolence. That's for damn sure.
Fired.
He's the boss, Tony. He's laid that edict down.
Not this week. I'm fucking post of the show guy.
Yeah, he's got me there. I can't really do it. I can't.
We all bow before our supreme part-time overlord, Patrick O'Dowd.
Hell yeah, damn it. You guys watch out or I may not come back next week. Probably not coming back next time. I don't know what happened.
The week after.
Okay, let's get into some news around the Nerdosphere. And I chose this first one because this is last week on the show. And this is all going to come together. Last week on the show, you guys talked a little bit about the struggles of Elio and how poorly it did in the box office. It was the latest Pixar movie. And some question as to what's wrong here. Why this didn't work. And the biggest reason, in my opinion, why it didn't work is because Disney doesn't give a shit and doesn't market Pixar films anymore at all. Like, those two entities are at odds with each other. It doesn't make sense. And if somebody else could please buy Pixar so that they can start making movies and get treated well again, because Elio could very well be a very good movie, but because Disney doesn't want to invest in, and here's where we go, original properties, we want to go with IP and things we know, they don't market something hard, it doesn't go well, then you declare it a failure. And we got a report from the Hollywood Reporter that for the third time, somebody is going to be tagged to direct an adaptation of Stephen King's novel, The Stand. And this time, unlike the first two iterations, instead of it being a miniseries, it's going to be a feature film for Paramount. Doug Liman, who I don't know from a hole in the head and had to look him up to see that he did Roadhouse for Prime Video, the remake, and The Instigators for Apple TV+, which I haven't seen, doesn't excite. I love The Stand, the novel, by the way. It's, well, you know, I think it's some of Stephen King's best work. It's about an apocalyptic plague that wipes out most of the population of Earth, and then there the United States that we know of. And there are these two populations that are hearing the voice of one, an elderly woman by the name of Mother Abigail, and another group that are hearing the voice of a dark man known as Randall Flagg. And it's basically an apocalyptic good versus evil battle. It has very strong religious theming undertones. Very, very, very much a novel I've enjoyed reading. Tons of characters. Very, very deep story. I have a lot of legitimate questions as to whether the novel is the type of thing that could be made into a movie. But DJ, this is why we can't get original stuff, because Hollywood doesn't trust it. So they go to the well of things that they think people are going to be okay with, familiar with, and know. I ask you, and I don't know how big of a Stephen King fan you are, can you even make The Stand into a movie that isn't at least three parts?
We're talking about, what, a 900-page book here? Which, to be fair, I've never read. So it's like a 900-page book. I was a bigger fan, and I'm going to take a little side road, of Robert McCammon when I was younger. And he wrote something similar called Swan Song, which is one of my all-time favorite novels, which is coincidentally being turned into a miniseries if it hasn't already. My girlfriend she's read all the Stephen King books, and she and I have talked about The Stand. She loves the original one with, I think, was it Gary Sinise? Was in it.
Gary Sinise, Rob Lowe.
In it.
Guy who plays Dauber, Ray Walston.
She tried watching the reboot here about a year ago, and she said Paramount she just couldn't get into it. She couldn't get into it.
Yeah, the Paramount Plus series with Alexander Skarsgård as Randall Flagg. I actually enjoyed it. I think it's actually interesting. It's a little more true to the novel than the one that came out in the 90s. I remember watching, that was a four-part miniseries, I want to say, four or five-part miniseries in the 90s with, a who's who of actors. Ossie Davis is in that movie. A lot of really, really great talent. And the kind of the big things that they had going for them in the Paramount Plus reboot was they had Alexander Skarsgård as Randall Flagg, and they had Whoopi Goldberg playing the Mother Abigail role. And I may actually rewatch it because it's been a while and I can't remember some of the other folks in it. It was fine. It did not take off the way that they thought it was. Did anybody watch the Roadhouse remake?
Hell no.
So I also don't trust this guy. It's like, I don't know. What are we doing here, Hollywood? Are the dollars really there for this?
No, there's not. I don't see this doing anything. Like, even Tina said that. She's like, why? Why are we doing this?
Why are we doing this? I'll tell you something that does have me excited, and that is the next news item that we're going to talk about, as we have learned who will be taking on the next James Bond film for Amazon MGM. And that is Denis Villeneuve, director of Dune and Dune 2, amongst other things. That 1,000% got my attention. And you know why it got my attention? One, I love the two Dune movies. This is going to have some storytelling. And it's going to be beautifully shot. And it's going to look amazing. I don't care if you're not a James Bond fan. I don't care if you're not interested in this. This one got me. I did one of these.
The only thing I have to add to this, I'm not a Dune fan, although I have respect for it, considering the love that's been shown for it on this show. My explanation for not watching it is I already have Star Wars. I'm not a Bond person. I'm sorry to those of you who are. But if anything translates from Dune to 007, Zendaya should be a Bond girl. You guys can continue the conversation.
Discuss. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay, I'm excited. Denis Villeneuve has not missed for me yet. I liked both Dune movies. I liked the Blade Runner movie that he did, and I like it. And this is what's got me excited for this James Bond thing. That Blade Runner movie flows cohesively with the original one in terms of tone and feel. Like it almost, given the fact that the effects are obviously more modern than the original Blade Runner, the feel and energy and vibe of the movie, it's almost one long flowing film, in my opinion. I loved the storytelling with The Arrival. So he's a brilliant storyteller. He's a brilliant craftsman in how he puts all this together. So I think in terms of capturing the vibe and essence of what Bond is supposed to be, yeah, man, sign me up. I'm here for this one.
Right. And I just want to read to you all the quote that he gave when the news broke. And he said, some of my earliest movie-going memories are connected to 007. I grew up watching James Bond films with my father ever since Dr. No was Sean Connery. I'm a diehard Bond fan. To me, he's sacred territory. I intend to honor the tradition and open the path for many new missions to come. This is a massive responsibility, but also incredibly exciting for me and a huge honor. I can get behind that. I can get behind that. I can get behind somebody who's going to, you know, take on this project lovingly and respectfully and put together something that I think is going to be special, because that's what this guy does, is he puts things together that are just, they're special. Everything I've ever watched that man's made has been amazing. So I'm all in and I'm all on board.
So two of the three things you need to continue this franchise, right? Is one is a great studio, two is a great director, and then the last thing we need is who's the next Bond.
Who is the next Bond, indeed? And I have no good answer for you. Like, I am honest to God. And I don't buy some of the names that have been thrown. Like, somebody threw out Tom Holland, and I'm like, Spidey? Yeah, see? You're like, no. No, Tom Holland can't be James Bond. No. I don't want it.
Adam Driver.
You just want Adam Driver and everything, man.
Yeah, I do.
You cast Adam Driver like everything.
It's really good. It's really good. Ever since he did the Saturday Night Live skit where he was like the maintenance guy undercover as Kylo Ren.
And the throws, undercover boss.
And throws the fucking, throws his lightsaber across the thing. And then I think it was, I can't remember who was playing the character from Saturday Night Live. Was like, we all know it's Kylo Ren.
Right. They did a follow-up to that sketch, too. It was great stuff. There's a second one out there. But, yeah, I absolutely love it as well. All right, let's get into some DC news. And let's see if we can, you know, Tony's kind of begged out of the last couple articles because Bond hasn't been his thing. And that's fine. You know, we're all unique and special snowflakes and deserve to only talk about things we know and want to talk about. It's official. So literally a week after James Gunn tells reporters to, quote, get off Matt Reeves' nuts, we get the news that there is a Batman Part 2 script, much to DJ's disappointment, because he is not a fan. We know you're not a fan. But we also got a release year, if not a date, 2027, hashtag 2027. The Batman 2 coming to theaters. Okay. The real question for me, I personally enjoyed the Batman. I understand that it wasn't for everyone. I liked the take. I thought it worked. We got a picture of a completed script, so we know it's done. Oh, I'm sorry. It is. It does have a date. October 1st, 2027. My bad. Does our Pat appear in an upcoming DC film in the James Gunnoverse? DJ, you're nodding.
I called it last week. We had this discussion last week, and I was the only one, because everybody's, who's going to be their Batman? Who's going to be their Batman? I'm planting my flag. It's probably going to be R. Pattinson. You're not going to have competing properties at this point. It's already a convoluted mess because we're rebooting so soon after Snyder's. People are already, you know, on edge with this property as it is. You don't want to convolute and muddy the water any more than you already have, you know, making that transition. Hell, they're using Jason Momoa as Lobo, which is already muddying the water a bit. You're not going to have competing Batmans in the theaters.
Tony, where does he show up? If Robert Pattinson is indeed the Batman of the DC, of James Gunn's DC Cinematic Universe, where would you have him show up?
I'm completely fine with it. I just don't know. I mean, I hope it happens. I mean, it makes sense now and why we've been... I mean, Evans and Gunn have kind of been, like, trolling everybody, literally, kind of like Giannis does with his not wanting to be traded kind of thing. It's funny. I like carrying through the bad guys from the Batman, right? That means that not only do we get Colin Farrell as the Penguin in DCU moving forward, we also get Paul Dano and Barry Keoghan as the Riddler and the Joker too moving forward, if they're going to carry forward from the first movie, right? I'm okay with that. Robert Pattinson, I think I talked about this last week, had voiced concerns about continuing to play a young Batman as he gets older. So maybe we jump forward here after Batman 2 into James Gunn DCU with a little bit older Batman.
What if he shows up in the Supergirl movie as a post-credits?
What if he shows up in the Superman movie as a post-credits?
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
He might. I don't know. The timing is really interesting, so it wouldn't surprise me, honestly, that we're like, what? We're basically a month away, a little less than a month away from Superman hitting, and now, boom, we have a Batman 2 script.
Yeah, it's read the tea leaves, guys.
It's very convenient. I may not be able to pick WWE PLEs, but I can read movies.
I'm more excited to see Millie Alcock in her super Wonder Woman outfit than James Corden sweater. Robert Pattinson again in their cloaks.
I mean, whatever gets you going.
Oh, it gets me going.
Okay, what do you do in your boudoir? Hey, not really my business.
Check out Game Gone Wrong, part of the Attitude of Aggression.
Oh, my gosh. It's coming back. He's always be selling. Okay, that was a quick little segment. We're going to go into our final segment of the day, talk a little Star Wars. Talk a little New York Times top 100 films of the 21st century. Stick around for that because I got some interesting thoughts. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back, everyone, here to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. So, fellas, Gareth Edwards is on quite a little bit of a run. So, you know, since 2014 when he directed Godzilla, he directed The Creator. Now, currently in theaters, Jurassic World Rebirth, right? That was this week. I'm not a big Jurassic Park guy. Or is it next week? I think it's this week.
I think everything released in July, so I think it's coming up.
Is it coming up?
Yeah, I don't think it's in theaters yet. I could be wrong.
I mean, we've all been wrong. It released...
just this weekend.
Yeah, F1's releases this weekend.
F1's next weekend.
Right.
Or no, F1 was this weekend, okay. Too.
F1 was this weekend. No, Jurassic World
is next weekend.
Coming weekend.
Okay, yeah. I thought it was the 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, you're right, DJ.
Yeah, I'm seeing showtimes on Wednesday, July 6th. So, naturally, with any films coming out at a director's hot, they're doing press tours. Gareth Edwards was doing an interview and was basically talked about his work in the film Rogue One, because he was the director of Rogue One as well. And many people, in talking to him about the success of Andor, talk about how Rogue One is many people's favorite film from the Disney Star Wars era and call it the best Star Wars film of the Disney era. I happen to agree with this assessment. Gareth Edwards is incredibly humble. And you know what he doesn't think? He doesn't think that he has made the best Disney Star Wars film. He also is like, I'm not interested in making another Star Wars movie. Quote, I'm very happy to move on and do my thing. He even says, I'm very grateful that people say nice things. Well, you have to keep in mind, and what you have to keep in your pocket as you go through making other films is that it's not about how people feel the day it gets released. It's how people feel about it 10, 20 years from now. As the movie comes out, you go, I'm going to pretend I'm living 10 years from now. And it doesn't matter what people say in the moment. It's the kid who comes up to you 20 years from now and goes, oh my God, I loved that movie. I think that's the reward. So he's saying thank you, but it hasn't been, it's coming up on 10 years. That movie came out in 2016. Kind of blows
that's
my mind
a crazy little. That yeah, that time has right? No meaning anymore.
It's 10-year anniversary is next year. I disagree that he has to wait 20 years to know how great this film was. I don't even think it's close. I appreciate that he's humble. I appreciate that he looks at it as a very fond memory of something from way back when. And that he's moved on. But, DJ, I don't know about you, man. I can't think of a better Disney Star Wars film. Disney Star Wars film. And, Tony, I don't know. I don't know if you watched Rogue One. Did you even see Rogue One? You did? But I don't think anything comes even close to it. Like, what would come close in terms of Disney Star Wars films to Rogue One? And don't say The Force Awakens.
Oh, no, nothing. I think he's being nothing. One, he's being humble. He's being polite. I think because the films were so divisive, and rather than go down the rabbit hole of that discussion, he'll probably just defer. I enjoyed my time making it. I don't think it's the best. I would, if he truly believes that his was not the best, I would love to hear his take on what he thinks is better and why. Just because that does fascinate me from a just a curiosity standpoint. I will say, while I don't have a lot of love for the sequel trilogy, as a crafted piece of work, I stand by The Last Jedi. I stand by Rian Johnson's work on that, even if I didn't like the way the story went and
Tony,
I didn't like the character
Tony,
developments.
Tony, ring the bell. Ring the bell. Ring the fucking bell.
Is that enough?
Right.
Is that enough?
More? You heard it, everybody.
More? Am I done?
That's good. That's
keep
good.
Going. Can't hear you. I'm ringing the bell.
You've done it.
What?
Yeah, okay, you can stop ringing the bell now. Yeah, there you go. That's all you need to know, folks. Right there. DJ agrees with me. Last Jedi, superior middle new trilogy film.
The only other movie from in the era, Solo is in that era too, right?
Yes.
And I think that's a very good second there. I really think
Solo gets such a bad rap.
It's such a good movie. I think it's such a good movie, honestly.
I went into Solo absolutely kicking and screaming. Like, I was like, I don't fucking want a Solo movie. And then I saw it.
It was good.
And I was pleasantly blown away.
Really good.
Pleasantly blown away by that.
Exactly.
It was so well written.
Here's the thing about that film. So I have a friend that I grew up with back home in Illinois. His name's Pete.
You didn't have any friends growing up, Pete was a big liar.
I had two. And Pete was one of the two. But here's the thing is when we went and saw The Phantom Menace and after it was over, he was like, oh, you know, that was Star Wars. And that was, well, here's the thing is us older fans, we just were trying to tell ourselves that Phantom Menace was better than it was. Like, and I get some folks hold, you know, that second trilogy that hold in their hearts. And Phantom Menace is not the worst of the Star Wars films ever. Looking at you, Attack of the Clones. But it's a bad movie. Yoda did.
When Yoda started doing, was not good. Was not good.
It took me a while, but when Yoda's doing ninja flips, that was too much. There's a bridge too far. Anyway, the point here was that Solo was just fun and was the most sort of fun Star Wars film I'd seen in a long time, and I felt so bad for Ron Howard, who was like the third director on that thing. I felt so bad for, I can't even remember who was cast to play Han Solo. The poor guy was forced to live under this titanic shadow that is Harrison Ford. Like,
The same guy that played Han Solo is the same guy that's playing Zeke right now in Marvel.
Oh, is it really?
Yes. It's Zeke Stain.
Huh.
It's Alderaan Heinrich.
So
we just talked about him at the beginning of the show.
So I know, and that shows you that sometimes we don't know our shit. Well, Tony knew his shit. I didn't know my shit. That's why you're the fifth guy that gets brought on the podcast and not the third.
Wow.
Anyway.
God. Hashtag things you don't say out loud, boom. Patrick. We'll get you there eventually.
Number one chair shot villain.
Villain, yeah. He always comes back.
I'm not on the bench. I'm like somewhere out in the crowd.
In
when the bench clears and they got to go deep to the...
He's
they
Billy.
Go deep into the roster.
Nah. You're Billy Ho over there with the tube socks and the fucking backwards hat for some reason at the basketball court.
When I was a kid, there was an old Pizza Hut commercial about a kid who played out in right field because he sucked. And that, you know, that was DJ. No,
that's me. I'm the rap forever right field.
Unnecessary. Completely unnecessary.
And sometimes this podcast is completely unnecessary, but we forge ahead.
The whole goddamn network, Patrick. Really, let me tell you, the whole MRF network.
So anyway, it was a fun film. You know, I could have done the Darth Maul thing at the very end was kind of, but whatever. But it was the Vision's the bad guy. How can you not be mad about, or how can you not get excited about that? Like, that's good stuff. Paul Bettany, highly underrated actor. He does not get the love he deserves. But, that's the thing, is the two, like, Star Wars adjacent stories, and I hate that Solo did so bad and was rejected by fans the way it was, because it wasn't a bad movie, and then it killed other projects. Like, it shied Disney away. And now we're in a world where, and I'm actually kind of okay with this, where Disney's kind of like, fuck it, we're just going to make this movie and call it Star Wars. Fuck it, we're going to do this one. And you know what? I think I'm okay with that. I actually think I'm okay with that. Like, I am okay with not being beholden to the Skywalker story. Am I wrong?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
Well, you kind of need it.
I guess I'm wrong.
You need Jedis,
know,
Patrick.
Though,
the whole fucking thing
you
is based on Jedis.
You don't need Jedis.
Somewhere you do.
To be the focal
they need to be
of
somewhere,
the story.
But they need to be somewhere. They need to have a purpose. But, and right now they don't.
Well, you got Baylan Skoll. That's what you got right now.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the Game of Thrones version of them coming up, which is going to be nice. So we'll see what happens.
Anyway, you got people like Asajj Ventress out there. Like, it's fine.
All right.
Be cool. There's going to be Jedi.
I'm worried.
I'm still bad about how Boba Fett did Cad Bane dirty, but that's okay.
Dude, that was anticlimactic.
Oh, I was so pissed. I hated that show so much.
I know
if you
did.
Listen to us.
I talked about that
Boba
with
Fett,
someone at
man,
work the other day. I'm like, his kid
hated that.
His kid was going back and watching something. Oh, just got started watching The Mandalorian, and he was like, "You got to watch this, this, and this. It helps if you watch this. Like, Rebels is a really big thing to help watch moving forward." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, and you got to watch the Book of Boba Fett." And he goes, "Oh fuck yeah,
it's so bad, so bad." That's really where Retainer Boy took off. By
it
the
is.
Way,
that's a true story.
Retainer Boy really launched because of the final episode of the Book of Boba Fett and Boba Fett riding a goddamn Rancor. And it was just seriously like some nerd in a basement's wet dream. And I say this as a guy who has literally picked up his model, Slave One, and flown it around on the screen while we've been having this conversation at different times. Like, I am Retainer Boy. But I'm not that Retainer Boy. All right. So, Gareth, just take the W, bro. Take the W. Own that you've made the best Disney Star Wars movie. And just move on. And until somebody unseats you, which I don't think they're gonna, because that movie has so much fucking heart that, like, especially, and then have you watched Andor, DJ?
I watched the first season. I'm about two episodes in on season two.
Jesus
I just
Christ.
Have not had time.
Would you finish season two of Andor? One, that series puts you through it. Like, puts you through it. You finish that season two, DJ, immediately. Like, don't wait. Immediately watch Rogue One. Changes the movie entirely. It's
okay.
So fascinating how differently you will watch that movie after you watch Rogue One. All right. Let's move into our last story. So I mentioned this before. The New York Times put out an article where they talked about how they surveyed all of these movie industry like giants, like filmmakers, actors, producers, directors, and basically asked them to put together and rank their like top 100 films of the 21st century. That resulted in a New York Times article where they put out the tabulated results. Now, as I mentioned, Tunney shared it, shared the New York Times link in our group chat. After about step four of trying to set up a New York Times like free subscription, I was like, I'm out. I'm just not going to look at all 100. But he also shared a tweet that was shared by or that was put out by Discussing Film that gave us the top 30. And it really is an interesting bunch of films. Number one, though, genuinely surprised me, even amongst filmmakers. Given that it's a relatively recent film, came out a couple of years ago, and it is quite good. I've seen it. It's quite good. It would not have been my number one, but Parasite, which won Best Picture a couple of years ago and is about a family that is left in charge of a very wealthy family's home to take care of, and they start living there, and then they discover that someone else is living within the house. It's weird. There's layers upon layers. It's very interesting. We did have a comic book film make the top 30. Dark Knight. The Dark Knight paid number 28. Couple of other films on here that I enjoyed. I had another one that surprised me. Zodiac being number 19. I was like, really? Really? People like that? Like, people thought that movie was great. Children of Men, which is a favorite of mine. If you're a Quentin Tarantino fan, Inglourious Bastards. Then you get into the top 10, and you got movies like The Social Network, No Country for Old Men, Get Out, There will be blood, which you want to look at bowling in a different way. Watch somebody get beat to death with a bowling pin. It's something. Interesting list. My favorites, notwithstanding. Tony, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the entire list. Were there other notables? I know Black Panther made it somewhere, but I'm not sure where. For me, number 9, Spirited Away, my favorite Miyazaki animated film. Saw it at the theater multiple times, is up there. Do love me some Dark Knight. Also love me some Wolf of Wall Street, oddly enough. And then Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. If you've ever heard me talk about Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, you know how much I feel about that movie and what it did with martial arts films in the early 21st century.
There's a lot of stuff missing, and it's so subjective. Like, none of the Lord of the Rings,
right.
Inception, Gladiator. I think Gladiator, yeah, Gladiator wasn't in 99, it was 2000. Apocalypto, The Prestige, Memento, Toy Story 3, The Departed, Casino Royale, The Passion, Blade Runner 2049, we already talked about, Hacksaw Ridge, Whiplash, Moneyball, talked about Dune already.
I love Moneyball.
Wall-E, Requiem for a Dream, Inglourious Bastards, Oppenheimer, Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. It's just, a lot of those movies are probably in the next 70, and we just disagree with the order. I did not do a deep dive on this. Like, I spend so much time when we do our actual lists that I just, like, need to conserve that part of my brain for when that happens. And we kind of just did this with, like, picking the best years. So go back to that one and listen to what we thought were the great years from 2000 to now. A lot of them were picked. But it's really cool to go ahead and say, hey, this is the first quarter of this century. And here were the best movies.
DJ, your thoughts on either of this top 30, things that stood out to you? And I don't know if you had a chance. I didn't have a chance to see the whole list, so I understand.
I got the tweet. Before DJ goes, because I want them to go in full, I did find Ray's burner account at Barmcake Aestheticism. The top 10, The Fast and the Furious, 2001, Too Fast, Too Furious, 2003, The Fast and the Furious, Tokyo Drift, 2006, Fast and Furious, 2009, Fast 5, 2011, Fast and Furious 6, 2013, Furious 7, 2015, The Fate of the Furious, 2017, Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw, 2019, F9, The Fast Saga, 2021, Fast X, 2023. That was Ray's top 11.
Was Buddy, you totally missed.
There was Flash Gordon wasn't number one, and I'm highly disappointed.
The first
21st century, 21st
first century. Quarter of the century. Right. Yeah, Fern Gully. Yeah,
that's okay. That's why I said Fern Gully 3.
Oh, yeah. I think Ray is actually working on the script right now.
Jesus Christ! The top 30. Right. I don't have much. There's literally 5 movies on this list that I've seen. The Dark Knight, where else are we?
You need to go see movies, man.
Yeah, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which I loved. Mad Max Fury Road, Spirited Away. And I know there was one more, and it's escaping me at the moment. But yeah, I'm kind of over lists, to be honest with you. I have a podcast friend that I go get on with about once a month, and we go down lists, whether it's music, whether it's movies, guitars, things like that. So while I thought this was a neat little deep dive, it's literally usually movies I've never seen and are not on my radar.
Fair. All right. Well, let's, instead of talking about things that are off of your radar, let's head into the show. Very brisk show today, guys. Quick one. I like it. Doesn't happen very often because we don't have a game to play, no lists. Didn't pontificate about Mephisto for 6 hours.
You only had 2 people reviewing the show at the beginning too, instead of 4. So,
right. It made a big difference. Don't worry, everyone. All of your irrational Marvel speculation will come back next week with at least myself, Dave, and Tony. I'm sure we'll find out if Ray makes it. I know he really wants to because he loves the Riri Williams character. I know, you know, we joke about him not being able to make it. He wouldn't be missing a show if it wasn't for a very good reason. And I think we all know that and trust that. For as much as for as hard a time as we give each other, this ain't open heart surgery. we're taking care of our own. Or sometimes we just need a break, and vacations are okay, unless you're Tunney, who the streak will never die, and we're proud of him for that. I thought, by the way, I thought that was a Savannah Banana shirt at first, until I really read it. The Kingpins thing, yeah, just the script and kind of the color scheme. I was like, when did he go to a Savannah Bananas game? Good for him.
This was made long before there was ever a banana from Savannah.
You could probably play for the Savannah Bananas. I bet you could do it. I bet you got the skills.
Not anymore.
Yeah, back in the day though, Tunney was a real deal, man. He could.
Tunney knew his ball. Tunney was a baller back in the day. I'm sure.
No. We're not talking again. Not what he did in the boudoir.
Or something. Okay.
Baseball. He was a pitcher. He could throw.
Oh, you're the one who said he knows how to handle his balls. So.
He does. So anyway, we still haven't gotten to what we're actually needing to get to here. Let's get to what you're watching. We'll start with DJ. DJ, what have you been watching since you haven't watched any of the movies on the New York Times Top 100?
I started watching, what did I tell you guys earlier? I started watching Andor a little bit, and there was another show, it just fell right out of my head, that I started sitting down and watching a couple episodes and just got distracted. I have been either, my model making hobby has kind of taken over all my free time, and I'm trying to get a YouTube channel up and going with that. The biggest thing that I've gotten back into lately is I've started playing the Mass Effect trilogy again, and that's consumed what other little bit of time I have left.
Classic. Mass Effect, one of those, at least the first two in particular. I know the third one gets kind of polarized a little bit here or there, but great RPG trilogy. It takes place in space. Spass. Tony, what you watching, bud?
A lot of Gordon Ramsay right now. He's got a couple Gordon Ramsay like secret surveillance shows out there. It's the new kind of restaurant recovery show from him. And then MasterChef, they got duos on there, which is kind of fun. What I'm about to watch is more important. I have not done it yet. I messaged Patrick and I'm also disappointed in him. But I'm about to embark on the third and final season of Squid Game. And I can't wait to report back, because I imagine once I catch episode one here after we're done, I will finish this final season this week.
Yeah, I told you when you messaged me, I felt bad. I haven't even watched season two yet. Watched season one, really, really enjoyed it. And then what happened? What happened was the second season came out, and I was like, oh, I gotta get ready to watch this. And I just never watched it. And then I forgot about it. And then it just sort of sat there by the wayside. I, in my never-ending quest to get people to watch series on Apple TV and try to convince people to get the subscription, highly recommend the dark sci-fi comedy Murderbot. I have talked about this on more than one occasion. Again, Alexander Skarsgård, he plays what they call a SEC unit. It is an android security robot that overrides his programming, allowing him to act independently should he choose to. However, he knows that if he ever gets caught, he'll be incinerated on the spot. And so he continues to pretend like he's properly programmed. And he is put on to guard a group of scientists who are very much like a love everyone hippity dippity planet of people that like don't believe in violence. And it's hilarious, because at the beginning it's the robot slowly learning about humanity through these people, and yet thoroughly judging them all the time. Like, why do they keep asking me if I want to do things? I don't give a shit. I don't care. Also, the robot is addicted to this show within a show, soap opera, where the main story is a human captain of a, almost like a Star Trek show, a human captain of a ship who falls in love with an android. The human captain is played by Jonathan John Cho. who you might remember as Harold from Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. Clark Gregg, Agent Coulson himself, plays another character on this show within a show. And it's hilarious. And the way that this robot looks at things and the way these people act and behave around it, it's a really great show. They're only 30-minute episodes and highly, highly recommended. I also am rewatching the television show Dark Matter on Apple TV because I'm reading the book. And Dark Matter was a series starring Joel Edgerton, I want to say, and Jennifer Connelly. And is about a alternate version of the main character kidnapping of the protagonist version of himself and sending him to the other guy's reality so that he can replace him. And it's about the prime guy trying to get back to his family and kind of claim his life back. Great, great show. And yeah, that's kind of it. That's what I've been up to. Ironheart. Watch Dark Matter. Great show. One season. And yes, Joel Edgerton. All right. Done with that. Let's head into our shit. We're about to get out of here. I'm losing track. I almost fell asleep there. Before we get out of here, tell everybody where they can listen to you. DJ, I hear you have a podcast.
I do. You can listen to myself, Rob, and Jason every Saturday on the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, part of the Chair Shot Radio Network, and on all of your favorite podcasting platforms.
Thank you very much, PC Tunney.
Follow me at PC Tunney on X. Like, I'm there. You got a question? Call Ghostbusters. I don't know. Fuck off. How about that?
Damn. Sure. Among other follows that you can throw out there, everybody, you can follow our good friend David Ungar at Attitude AGG. I hear he does a few other podcasts, something about Game of Thrones. He's always aggressive with his attitude. Big, I hear about that as well.
Big interview for Unidentified History as well that's out there on AttitudeAggression.com and Chairshot Radio Network.
So, yeah, make sure you follow all of that. And I know he hates it when we do it, but it's Ray Cash at It's Ray Cash, R-E-Y as in Mysterio, C-A-S-H as in money. So follow at It's Ray Cash. You can follow me on all of the social medias at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. You can listen to me every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Monday, talking nerdy stuff with these guys. Tuesdays, talking sports on the Four Corners podcast. And on an occasional Wednesday, I talk wrestling when either Greg or I decide to show up. Otherwise, you get whatever programming PC Tony puts on the show for you. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. We will see you all next week. Now, get yourself out of the basement. Get some sun. Go see Jurassic World Dominion, Rebirth, whatever the hell it is. Dinosaurs on the big screen. It's going to be cool. And we'll talk about it maybe next week. Who knows? You've been listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to Ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to Ramp.com and love finance again.